Views on this program are opinions of dental industry experts and not necessarily those of dentist advisors. Opinions shared in the following interview do not constitute personal financial advice. This program is furnished by Dentist Advisors, a registered investment advisor.
This is Dentist Money. Now, here's your host, Reese Harper.
Welcome to the Dentist Money Show, where we help dentists make smart financial decisions. I'm your host, Reese Harper, on site here at Yankee Dental Congress 2017 with Andrew Schwartz from Schwartz and Schwartz. That was a mouthful, but I got through it, right?
Yeah, it sounded great.
So tell us about Schwartz and Schwartz a little bit, Andy, and how you got into tax and accounting. How you got into it and ended up working with your brother, it sounds like, at some point. That's a pretty unusual story. Listeners probably want to hear just how it all happened.
Sure. So back when I graduated from college, my father had an accounting firm. And then over time, we focused more on the medical and dental side of things. And we realized that dentists were the better clients versus physicians and psychologists and people like that.
And why did you find that was a better client for your firm? What reasons made you kind of narrow that down?
Well, the reason was that a lot of dentists go when they open their own office. They'll open or they'll purchase their own office. So there's a lot of single owner practices out there, and they all need accounting help. And while they're all different, they're all very much the same. So we could gather information and help them run their business better.
Sometimes these guys are in big, the medical guys are in big groups, make decisions like as a team. Sometimes it's harder to get an opinion about which professional even to use, you know?
Yeah, the medical is a lot more difficult. The practices are bigger a lot of times, and in each specialty has their own challenges.
Yeah.
With dentistry, there's a lot more one and two owner practices. And as I said, we can collect a lot of information. We collect the information, we repackage it, and we help them understand their overhead, their productivity metrics, their collections, their profitability, their taxes. Because it's such a homogeneous group, we're able to really collect information and help them make good decisions.
I'm excited because I feel like you've had so much dental experience that you're going to bring a unique perspective to this conversation. And I think I'd like to start by just talking about something that comes up a lot, which is overhead and profitability, and you know, how much money should I be making? How much should I be paying out into certain areas? Give us some thoughts about, maybe before we get into metrics, just give us some thoughts about overhead and how dentists should look at, you know, staff and costs of staff. And when people tell you like, I'm paying too much for this, or I don't know if I should hire this person, or I don't know if I'm paying too much for my staff overall, or should my hygienist make this much? Let's just talk about overhead generally and kind of some thoughts that come to mind as you have that discussion with clients.
Sure. So pretty much every practice has overhead.
Yeah.
They need to have overhead to have a successful practice. What we see is most of our clients, the clients that run the leanest, their overhead is about 45% of collections, and then it ranges all the way to 60% or more of collection. So there is quite a big range there. And when we talk about overhead, it's non-doctor overhead. So we back out what the owners get paid in their benefits and what any associates get paid in their benefits.
So before the doctor gets any money, you know, the most profitable client might be keeping 55% of what they collect or what they produce.
Yeah, for general practice.
That's
better ones
really profitable though, right?
Yeah, that's the ones that run the leanest.
And do you see, what kind of practice does that look like typically? Is that really a small location, or do big practices, do you have some big practices that get to that level of profitability as well?
We have good-sized practices that get to that level. Mm-hmm. They're just very efficient, and they're productive dentists, and they keep their staffing costs down and their other costs down.
Yeah.
But a lot don't get to that point.
Yeah.
And their overhead is over 60%, so they're only keeping 30-35% of what they make.
When do you start getting concerned? Because there's probably a point in time where you say, that overhead looks too high, and we need to probably address it, and then this is normal. When do you start getting concerned, I guess?
Well, once a year we prepare a report for our clients that compares the overhead of their practice to their peer group, and we go over it with the client, and if their overhead is high between staff expenses, dental supplies, lab, facility costs, things like that, we have a discussion about why they're high and what they could do to maybe bring it down. But we don't look at the one number for total overhead. We look at the different pieces of overhead.
Yeah.
And high overhead may not be bad. High overhead may mean there's capacity, and it may be more of a revenue issue.
And in time, they can kind of grow out of that high overhead if they get enough more revenue.
If they're going to keep that overhead, yes.
Yeah. What red flags do you see on what if you, do you ever see hygienists or office managers that are overpaid, or do you usually find that doctors just complain about it and it's usually pretty fair, you know?
Well, with any employee, I'm sure your employees as well, they think they're overworked and underpaid.
Yeah.
And the practice owner thinks that their employees are underworking and overpaid a lot of times, not always. So we do look at what they're paying per hour to each of their employees. But just as importantly, we look at what their staff expenses are as a percentage of collections, because that's the more important number.
Yeah.
How much productivity are you getting out of the staff?
Yeah. Do you ever find that you need to coach clients to sort of embrace overhead in as something that's useful rather than something that they're just mad about or frustrated with? Or do you feel like people have, doctors generally have a pretty good attitude about their overhead?
Well, when we meet with clients, we provide them a report following each meeting that shows their overhead by meaningful category. And so we force them to look at it once a month. I mean, following each meeting, and it's part of running a business.
Yeah.
Whether it's good or bad.
Yeah. It seems like, do you think dentists struggle more with this managerial stuff and overhead than other business owners? Or do you think it's a common characteristic among all business owners to struggle with it?
Well, I go to an accounting conference every year for people who manage accounting practices, and they struggle with it too, with working on overhead and their expenses and talking to their partners about it. So I think it's anybody who has a business has to deal with it. What I find with dentists is they're very smart people. They like to learn. They like to understand things. So at first, when someone takes over a practice or opens a practice, thinking about overhead is daunting. But over time, they study it. Most of them learn it, and it's an important part of running their business.
And they can eventually get it dialed in. Right?
Yeah, they don't have a choice.
Let's talk about, we talked about overhead generally. Let's just list kind of generally overhead categories in order from large to small. We talked about staff, which is obviously the biggest category. Kind of where does it go from there?
So the categories that we use is staff expenses, which is payroll taxes and benefits. Then there's dental supplies, lab fees, and facility costs. And those are all about 5 to 7% of somebody's collections generally, based on the information we collect. Facility costs is rent, repairs and maintenance, utilities, things of that nature. And then we group all the other expenses kind of together. So office expenses and miscellaneous and IT and all that runs about 10%, 7 to 10% of collections. And last but not least is advertising and promotion.
And marketing, yeah.
Yeah, which runs about 1 to 2%.
That's what I found is typical, right? Some people typically spend between 1 to 3% sometimes on marketing. Do you feel like that's adequate for most people, or is it just where they normally, that's just the way that they spend?
It just kind of works out that way, but spending money on marketing is interesting because there was an article recently in Dental Economics that the best ways, the best four ways to attract new patients is first, through your current patient base. Second is by having a good website. Third is by using Google or Facebook ads, the ads that you can spend $5 a day or whatever.
Yeah.
And the last one is by getting good reviews on Yelp and Google.
Uh-huh.
And those, besides setting up a website, are all very inexpensive.
Yeah.
The best way to market is through the current patients, and the best way to do that is by maximizing their experience, having them have a really great experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So ultimately, there's, even though spending money on marketing is important, there's not a lot of avenues for efficient uses of those dollars.
No, there's no way that someone could say, if you go and you spend $25,000 on this marketing, we're going to get you X number of patients. It's just, it doesn't, the print advertising and sending out postcards and all that stuff, people do it, so it must be somewhat effective, but it's very, very expensive.
Yeah.
But what I would recommend is, the 1-800-DENTIST guy, the guy Fred Joyle. So he wrote a book, Everything is Marketing. It's worth reading. It's a quick read, but it really drives home some very basic fundamentals of the experience.
And it focuses on the patient experience, or it focuses on a customer experience?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're just saying that ultimately that's the way that most people should view marketing is, if I treat my patients right, if I have a good experience, they're going to refer, and I need to just focus on that.
Yeah, they become your walking billboard. They're out, and if they have a really good experience, they'll tell people they had a really good experience.
Yeah, I don't know that the listeners may not know this, but you've worked with hundreds of dental practices over the years, and you've got you've probably had these tough conversations a few times about which areas of overhead to cut. Right, I've got to cut some staff costs, or I've got to cut this or cut that. How do you tell people to cut overhead without hurting their practice?
Well, we tell them to utilize their overhead more efficiently. So with staff expenses, which run mid-20s to high-20s to maybe a little bit over 30% of collections, there's things they can do to utilize that cost better. And one thing we recommend is to utilize technology to replace labor-intensive activities. So there's programs out there like Lighthouse 360, RevenueWell by Patterson, Solution Reach, yeah, which used to be Smile Reminders, and Demand Force, which is now owned by Intuit. And those programs sit on top of your practice management program, and it's how a lot of the conversations between the practice and the patient take place. And it's very, very efficient. It's cost effective. Those aren't expensive programs, and it's cheaper than paying somebody to do all this stuff.
Yeah, otherwise you might be spending $30,000 a year to have someone just make phone calls all day.
Yeah, and you can use technology to do it better, better, more efficiently. I actually had a client, this guy bought a practice, and he really thought he was going to do great right off the bat, and he really struggled for a while. I'd go to the meetings, and he would talk about how he's not doing that great and all this stuff. So I went there one January, and it was the same thing, you know, not doing that great. And then when I went back after tax season in May to meet with the guy, he said things are booming. And so I asked him, of course, what changed? And he said, I started using Lighthouse 360, and I think that made all the difference.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's just more effective way to confirm your appointments, to fill schedules after cancellations. It can send out surveys. Surveys are important. Keep track of how your patients feel you're doing. And lastly, it somehow promotes Yelp and Google reviews.
Interesting. What are some of the most common areas, you know, that you see dentists spending too much money on overhead? What are some of the most common areas when they're maybe outside of the range, both within staff costs and maybe outside of that?
Well, it's within staff costs, but there's other areas where you can save a little bit of money. One is the merchant fees, the credit card fees. A lot of people sign up with their bank right when they purchase or open the practice. They don't even look at whether they're getting the best deal. There are better deals out there, and it's pretty cookie cutter. The whole industry, it's a commodity industry, and you can save some money there.
Yeah, that's a good point.
There's insurance. You definitely want to work with one insurance person to make sure you have adequate coverage, but there's things they can do by putting all your insurance with one carrier that could save some costs.
What's some other, I mean, have you sat down with dentists and you kind of talk to a young dentist getting out of school, and imagine somebody that's new practice owner, he's going to buy his first location, and he's kind of intimidated about what's to come over the next 5 years. What's a piece of advice you'd give to that younger dentist? Just not about overhead, but just about general business advice, you know, and what you kind of see that younger dentists struggle with.
So if someone's looking to buy a practice or open a practice, and they come to us and they have a lot of student loan debt, and they're worried about making enough money for their new family and all this stuff, we just let them know about the success that all of our clients have had. Dentistry is still a very profitable.
Give them some perspective, right, on the things that might be coming for them.
And it takes time, and taking out debt isn't bad if there's a plan to pay it off over time.
Yeah.
And taking out debt allows them to go and build a business and earn a good salary over the years.
Sometimes in our conversations with new dentists, we feel a pressure almost that by eliminating their student loan really quickly out of the gate, that it'll almost give them financial freedom.
Yeah.
Do you ever run into that and have to coach people through the importance of balancing debt reduction with investing in your business and saving and building liquidity? Do you ever have that kind of a conversation with people?
Yeah, we have that conversation a lot because everybody wants to get out of debt as quick as possible.
Right away, right?
But there's a lot of issues there. First of all, you need cash flow to do what you want to do. Generating profitable income and salary and using that money to pay down your debts, there's going to be taxes owed, and a lot of people pay down the debts and then get stuck with a little bit of a tax bill every once in a while.
Yeah.
And it's just, it allows you to be in debt, but it does get paid off over time.
Yeah.
And it's just part of the monthly cash flow more than anything else.
Yeah. How do you view debt? What's your philosophy on debt?
So my philosophy on debt is, as I just said, it's necessary to achieve a lot of financial goals. I don't think people need to be in debt for the sake of being in debt. If someone has money sitting in a money market account earning a tenth of a percent, and they have no plans for that money in the short term, they should use it to pay down debt. But I think debt's a great tool.
What's your, when someone says, should I save for retirement? Should I start a 401k? Should I start putting money away? What's your philosophy on using tax qualified retirement plans?
So my philosophy on that is you want to start as soon as possible to put away as much money as possible. The money, any money that someone puts away in the early years just grows so much more than money put away later when they're trying to catch up. And putting money into a retirement plan is the best tax shelter available to people during their working years. You save taxes when money goes in, and the money grows tax deferred. It's a nest egg that's creditor protected. So we're in a litigious society. You can put money in a place where it won't be, we won't lose it if you get sued. That's a great thing. And you need to build a nest egg. Everybody needs a nest egg.
Yeah.
And I think people should max out their retirement without putting extra money towards the student loans. They should pay what they need to pay.
Yeah.
As long as the interest rates aren't too crazy.
If a dentist comes to you and says, my friend's got this retirement plan for me. It's grows tax-free. I can get it out tax-free.
Oh, yeah.
What am I talking about when I'm explaining this?
A nice whole life insurance policy. Yeah. Whole life insurance policy. From a insurance salesperson, whole life insurance policy solves every problem. But the problem is...
It's God's gift to man, right?
Yeah. The first thing I would say, if an insurance agent comes over and says that the first thing somebody should do is a whole life insurance policy, I tell them to find a new insurance person, a new financial advisor. The retirement plan set up by the government is a great way to put away money, to save taxes, creditor protection, like I talked about, tax-deferred growth. 529 plans for education is a great education savings plan. The whole life insurance policy can't meet that. Whole life insurance plans are fine at the end once everything else is maxed out, if it makes sense for somebody. But if somebody recommends it as the first thing, then my advice is to find somebody else to.
What's your investment philosophy when somebody says, like, you know, I'm scared of the stock market. The stock market's rigged by the government and controlling it. What advice do you kind of give people about about investing just generally?
Well, a nice and expensive index fund or something like that, people can put money in and add money over time, where it's easy to add money. There's low fees and they take advantage of the dollar cost averaging. It's the way to go. It's proven since 1929 to be the best place to put the money.
Do you find that people are able to kind of self-prepare, or do people respond and kind of come to their CPA for a lot of advice regarding their retirement and their money and struggling to kind of get ready for that? Did dentists struggle with that, or do you think most of them have a solution already?
No, everybody struggles with it because it's more fun to spend money than to save money. But as part of what we do, our dental clients, we meet with 3, 4, or 5 times a year. Part of the reason we have so many meetings is to have an ongoing dialogue. And one of the things we continually discuss is retirement plans, whether they have the best retirement plan in place. The biggest hurdle we have isn't the dentist putting away money. A lot of them resist putting away money because they don't want to put away that much money for their staff.
Mm.
But there's different ways to set up the plan where enough can go away for them that putting away money for staff, which is a noble thing to do on its own right, doesn't deter them from setting up a plan.
Yeah, do you think that sometimes is a struggle for them to look and say, well, I don't want to match anything for my staff, or I don't want to profit share anything with my staff?
Yeah.
Seems like that comes up a lot, but I don't know if they know how to quantify that. That might still be good for them, even if they do give some money away to staff. It's either to the staff or it's going to go to the government, right?
Right. So it does come up a lot. And we usually, the amount of taxes somebody will save by putting away money into a retirement plan exceeds what they'll put away for their staff.
Yeah.
And there's different options out there. So we try to, if someone is facing that hurdle and can't get over it, we try to, you know, give them good information to help them realize the importance of setting up a retirement plan.
Talk to me a little bit about your philosophy on business coaching or practice management consulting and practice consulting. So I think some people say it's a waste of my money and I always get hijacked and I never get ahead when I do that. Some people say it, you know, and maybe for some personality types, it might be helpful in certain situations. I think there's a general perception in the marketplace that it costs a lot and I don't get a lot out of it. But is there a time when it's helpful? Is there a time when it's useful?
We've seen some of the consultants go in and they do great work, and different consultants work different ways.
In which ways do you find it to be helpful?
Well, I think to put together a plan, and part of it is a good consultant will make the business owner, the practice owner, accountable to somebody. Because if somebody owns their own practice, they're not accountable to anybody except maybe their spouse. So it makes them accountable to somebody. There's a plan with goals and all sorts of things that a lot of people, a lot of business owners, not in dentistry and in all businesses, don't realize to put together.
Yeah.
So a good coach can help you know, find areas where things can be improved and set goals and make the person accountable.
So as a general rule, in your experience, how would you grade, I guess, the practice management industry and consulting industry from what you've seen?
Sometimes they get an A and sometimes they get an F.
Does it cause damage sometimes?
Yeah, they go in and wreak some havoc sometimes.
Yeah.
But I think the most important thing to make it work is the owner, the practice owner, has to be committed to change. Mm-hmm. So to have a third party, an outsider, come in and make recommendations, if the owner isn't going to implement anything, it's
got to be
a waste.
Open to that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I would like to see a practice consultant put their money where their mouth is, and instead of doing a fixed fee, $60,000 per year type situation, maybe a much smaller fixed fee, and then the rest based on results.
Yeah.
But none of them do it.
Or time, right? Yeah, time would be nice at some point. Because it seems like a lot of professionals can results-oriented approach, I think it'd be the best pricing model, right?
A value.
Maybe even at a minimum level, it's just nice to know that someone has to earn the value to come back. Like, I have some people I pay a really high hourly rate to, and I realize that in some situations that's not ideal. But sometimes it's amazing to me that even though some people's hourly rate might be really high, some people I keep coming back to all the time.
Yeah.
Because they're delivering value all the time to me. And it feels like that's one way. I just don't see that ever. It doesn't really happen ever. And I think part of the reason is sometimes it's difficult for... I think dentists regret hiring consultants pretty early on in the process.
Yeah.
And that's not always fair to the consultant. You know, sometimes you spend 20 grand to 50 grand to 70 grand on something. There's a fair amount of buyer's remorse typically after that transaction.
Yeah.
Even if it's a new car, sometimes people feel bad about that, you know? But I feel like sometimes consultants don't feel like they can get dentists to engage for a long period of time unless they collect a large fee.
Oh, maybe.
And unless that's what I've been told occasionally. I don't know. It's kind of interesting to me because I feel like dentists need business help.
Yeah.
They're getting a lot of that from their CPA. They're getting some of that from friends and colleagues and continuing education. But, you know, they don't have a lot of business management experience, you know, coming into this. And it's really hard to sort of know how to run a bit the business of dentistry without having any education or consulting but I think they get frustrated with how expensive it can be to get that advice.
It can be expensive, yeah.
Yeah.
But they learn and most of them develop good practices over time.
Over time, right?
They figure it out.
Yeah. Okay, if you had to say the top three mistakes you kind of see dentists make, if we had to list kind of some big mistakes that kind of come to mind. Maybe not a concrete list, but just the first kind of few things that come up. If I say, over the last, 20 years of doing this.
All right, biggest mistakes. One is when a dentist completely delegates the daily finances of the practice to somebody else, especially to one person. We have seen some embezzlement the last year or so.
So when you delegate all the financial responsibility, you're talking about insurance coordination, payments collections, adjustments, everything up front.
Some practices will have one person... enter the procedure and the collection into the dental management system, collect the money, write up the deposit, enter into QuickBooks, and then bring it to the bank. And so that's...
Big red flag, right?
Big red flag, yeah. And they're completely disengaged from the process.
Yeah.
So that's one no-no.
Okay, just to stop on that, because that's crucial, how would you recommend delegating those duties? What's the optimal way to kind of divvy up all those responsibilities?
Well, one thing is segregation of duty, so somehow have more than one person involved, even if the practice owner is one of the people. So the practice owner should look at the day sheet every day, look at what was booked to the production, look at what adjustments were posted, and then make sure that the credit card batch total in the deposit slip match with the money that came in. On a daily basis, somebody can keep an eye on it. On a weekly or monthly or yearly basis, they can't.
Yeah.
Another step is that the owner can do is once a month, take a look at the collections, the monthly collections per the dental management system, and compare that with the deposits in the bank and make sure that those are pretty close. Mm-hmm. So if the owner is involved, at least with those two steps, that
it provides some accountability to the office manager that eliminates the possibility for embezzlement. Even though it could still happen, it minimizes it.
The practices where there was embezzlement, the owner had nothing to do with any aspect of the collection, recording, and deposit.
Any system. Common themes in those embezzlement cases you can think back of and go, this is how was the embezzlement done in the ones that you can remember? And what was the specific cause how the money was being withdrawn?
Well, usually the cash that they took, and it was the way they did it is they they would actually hold back depositing checks, and then they would include those checks in when there was cash, and they would take the cash. But because every day nobody was looking to make sure that the deposit agreed with the day sheet.
Okay.
So looking at the day sheet's key.
Saves it.
Yeah.
What's another big mistake that comes to mind?
Huge mistake is people have no website or not a good website. This day and age, if anybody wants to go to a new provider, a restaurant, anything, they go into the website. So I was at a client the other year, and they were complaining they weren't getting many new patients. So I just asked if they had a website, and they said no.
Interesting.
So
I wonder if that might be regional too. I wonder how it seems like some places I know they focus so much on websites. It's like they're everything. And other cities, it seems like people aren't as technology focused, or they're not as forward thinking about that.
Yeah. I don't know. I just see some don't have it. And then the third thing is turnover. Employee turnover can be toxic.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of managing people is very, very challenging. Somehow, everybody needs to set goals, quantifiable goals. You need to hold people accountable to reach those goals. And just as the leader of the practice, just keep people motivated and feel like they're doing a good job, but they need to know what they need to do.
So how do you stop employee turnover from happening? You know, like what makes employee turnover happen, you think?
So what they say is if somebody leaves during the first year, it was a bad hire. If someone leaves after the first year, they weren't properly motivated, they weren't properly incentivized, they didn't feel like there was any growth or any opportunity, and they just, the job became stagnant, and so they felt like they had no choice to leave. So part of it is to set these goals. Well, hire good people, let them know what they're supposed to do, talk to them about things they want to learn to improve their own professional lives, and maintain an ongoing dialogue and let people be engaged in the whole situation.
Yeah, that's great insight. Well, if you had to give final kind of pieces of advice, any tips that you'd want people to take away, what would kind of be the maybe top few pieces of advice that you'd like to leave with the listeners?
So I think I'd say that, so dentistry is a profitable business, but it is a business, and as any other business, it's a business that needs to be run. So it needs to be managed like a business. The dentist, most of them are very capable dentists, and they want to go in, do dentistry, and leave at the end of the day. But that's being an associate. Owning a business takes time, discipline, and always, people should always be striving to learn more. I think that's the biggest takeaway.
Yeah. Well, Andy, I really appreciate it, man. You've got a great demeanor and tone. I can tell you really care about your patients, your clients, patients. I've been talking about patients all day. Seems like you take a lot of pride in the work that you do, and it's made a big difference, I know, in the New England area, and I hope that you continue to have a lot of success. Thanks for being on the show, and we look forward to having you back again.
Great. Thank you.